Welcome back. We're doing our weekly preview show a little earlier this week with Thanksgiving coming up on Thursday. Unfortunately, Pat had a last-minute conflict and could not join us to give all his thoughts on this past weekend and his experience up close and personal watching Penn State trounce Nebraska. So perhaps on another show, or if he somehow wants to call in and tell us, welcome to do that too. But once again, it's myself, Tim, and Jared. We're going to start out before we preview Rutgers, though. We're going to just give some a few final thoughts about Nebraska. Now that we've had a couple days to come down from the high of, all the Terry chants coming from the crowd and just the euphoria of running all over Nebraska and Catron Allen becoming the all-time rushing leader in program history, and Nick Singleton tying Saquon Barkley as for most rushing touchdowns in a career. I don't know about you, Jared. I actually did rewatch the highlights finally today,
Same.
and the one thing that's at least one thing that stuck out to me was in the beginning on Nebraska's opening drive. I mean, I was impressed with even more impressed with Dejon Lane's closing speed to prevent a touchdown run from Emmett Johnson here, because it certainly looked like Johnson should have housed that run. I mean, he
Good
had
point.
plenty of real estate and seemed to have a few steps on everybody, but great job closing in and preventing the score touchdown right there. And, sometimes those end up being like absolutely critical plays, and Nebraska ended up getting stuffed, a few plays later on fourth down. And Penn State from there ended up marching 98 yards to score a touchdown of their own. And at that point, it was almost like Nebraska never really recovered from that. So,
Exactly, yeah. And Penn State got a quick field goal not too long after that, and they were just, able, they had the luxury of playing with a double digit lead and kind of, pin their ears back a little bit on defense. But no, that was a great point about Lane. It was interesting too, because he was in a three hat there was a three-way battle for that other the Spartan excuse me the starting spot outside of opposite of Wheatley between him and King Mack and Antoine Belgrade Shorter, and Lane was kind of the odd man out for most of the year. Didn't really see him too much after he played a bit as a true freshman. So saw a lot more of him on Saturday, and he definitely rose to the occasion. But yeah, that's a great point, because he made a touchdown saving tackle there that I was thinking either Nebraska really kind of knows how to attack this defense, or maybe this is just a case of the defense needs to settle in, like last year, or excuse me, last week after allowing a quick touchdown to Michigan State. But yeah, they obviously, that was such a major momentum swing in the game early, just getting that fourth down stop. And we mentioned Amari Campbell being in on that, and Zane Durant was the other guy that just kind of ate up some space in the middle, and they took him down for that fourth down stop that just ended up being a huge momentum swing right off the bat. And like you said, 98-yard touchdown drive, and it was all Penn State from there.
absolutely. And of course, we talked about, the crowd and how, they all were chanting Terry's name, and Terry, and I, we kind of, we'll actually get into this a little later in the show when we talk coaching search updates. But of course, there's all this talk now about, should Terry Smith get the permanent job? You had the players, holding up the signs, to the
Screaming into the camera.
even the camera. You had Michael Robinson at halftime making a plea on felt like a court. I said this in my position grades post, but I gave a bonus, instead of a bonus category, I gave an A grade to the Terry Smith PR campaign, because it sure felt like there was something a bit coordinated there,
Yeah, you could say that. There was a lot of things. I think between that, the Joe 409 pin, some of his quotes about, it's my locker room, and yeah, you could definitely say that. I think he was definitely trying to make a statement, and made a pretty strong one, I'll say.
absolutely. I mean, I feel like we covered just about, everything we could say, unless you got a few more things you want
to add. Yeah, just a couple things. You used a really perfect word when you were starting to describe the game, euphoric. I mean, it was just such a game. It was a game where everything went Penn State's ways almost. You know, just the bounce of the ball, the big plays were going in Penn State's favor. Grunkmeyer had one incompletion all night long, you know, only through 12 attempts, but, you know, connecting on 11, a lot of them to wide open.
Jared, not to interject, but Grunk should have been, frankly, should have pitched a perfect game. I mean,
yeah, he should have.
Pass interference, that was
100% agree. Yeah, they missed he threw to Hudson. Tyron Hudson. His one incompletion, and the defender grabbed his waist and kind of impeded him as he was streaking towards the middle of the field. So you're right, that probably would have been a touchdown toss, and 12 for 12. But yeah, it was just between the records being tied, and you know, Catron later breaking the record later, Singleton tying it earlier in the early on in the game with two touchdowns in the first half. So and the icing on the cake is to especially of Penn State fans of our generation, you know, to watch them wallop Nebraska. That just has some significance to it as well. So the one thing I did want to make sure I brought up today that we didn't discuss on Saturday in the post game was how well Andrew Rapoulier and Khalil Dinkins played on Saturday night. I mean, just they did some amazing job, you know, holding the edge, helping Catron get the record, just helping in a lot of ways. They were both the unsung heroes of the night, I would say.
And I would agree, because I actually gave tight ends a B+, despite the only receiving stat being recorded was Rapoulier's 4-yard touchdown grab, because they, like I said, they did a tremendous job in run blocking, especially helping out the O-line, which is setting up lanes for Catron and Nick to run through all night.
Yeah, the whole line played great. Drew Shelton especially, I thought, had a really big night and just really won his matchups and just got guys way out of position and like you said, created some huge running lanes. I saw Donko shoving people around quite a bit throughout the evening. So just it was nice to finally see that play out of the offensive line where they were just able to kind of mash Nebraska's front and create those big running lanes. You know, Kodal Nicky was drawing up a lot of really, really good plays to get people open, get the ball in people in space and just find, you know, open space all over the field, whether it's a running game or passing game. So yeah, it was quite the fun evening of football after a season of just, you know, a lot of losses piling up and despair and just, you know, all the wrong things happening at the wrong time. It was just such a nice change of pace to have pretty much the exact opposite, where it was just Penn State's night, you know, for 3 hours.
In a way, now that I think about it, it's a pseudo version of the 2002 night game beatdown of Nebraska. I mean, that was a much more electric atmosphere in comparison. I mean, obviously larger attendance at the time. It was the largest attendance.
Yeah. And at the time it was early in the season too. And at the time Nebraska was like, you know,
they were still a nationally
Georgia's right now, you know? So it'd be like rolling one of those teams early in the season.
But it's still in a way felt just in terms of, you know, this is a team that was capable of, you know, well, I guess beating you, really. I mean, I know they were underdogs, but, like, you know, if they were playing their A game, they were certainly capable of
absolutely winning. Yeah, no, they're a 7-3 team. You know, they've got some playmakers on offense. They've got the third best passing defense in the nation. Pretty good defense overall, which, you know, even really just goes to show how well, you know, how far the passing games come along, even though it was mostly based off of play action, but just the fact that they're able to get, you know, wide open looks against the nation's third pass defense is just very promising and, you know, something I wish we would have seen a lot earlier, but it's nice to finally see.
Yeah. And I think what I'm in terms, like comparing to Chaz, I say it in the same way. It's like, we blew them out at night. It was a very, you know, euphoric kind of cathartic feeling in a way, especially, you know, because think back to like a month ago, you know, I read we fired James Franklin and all the talk is about, oh, at least from the national media is like, oh, it's going to be Matt Rhule. You know, it's the obvious choice. He's a former Penn State player and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I kept, and I, you know, and I'm this is probably a billionth time I've said this on the show, but I think Matt Rhule has died James Franklin. He's never beaten a ranked team as a power four head coach. He's like 2-23 lifetime against ranked teams. Those two wins came at Temple. Yeah, I'm not saying he's an awful coach, but he's definitely a downgrade from Franklin.
Yeah. But when you're thinking who's the guy that's going to get us to the next level and actually get us to the national title game, you know, but hopefully win a national title game, you know, looking at Rhule's record, his big game record, his last couple stops, it's not all that promising. So totally with you on that point, Tim.
Absolutely. Any final thoughts before we move on to preview Rutgers?
Yeah, let's move on to the I can't believe we're here, but the regular season finale.
I know. Think back a few months ago, we were thinking, all right, this is an opponent you just like, you know, flick with your finger as you prepare for taking on Ohio State or Indiana or Oregon in the Big Ten championship game the following week. But alas, that is not the case. But you got 2-5-6 teams playing for bowl eligibility, so I guess it's the next best thing here.
I was actually thinking about when I wrote the power rankings, when I power ranked each game heading in the season over the summer, and I don't know where Rutgers wasn't terribly high on the list, but the one thing I noted is that this could be a really significant game because, you know, Penn State could be playing for a spot in the Big Ten championship game or, you know, best case scenario, they're 11-0 and playing for an undefeated regular season. So never would have guessed they would be playing for to try to get bowl eligibility. But, you know, we've covered that pretty well this season. All the things that have gone wrong to get to this point, but definitely a unexpected tidbit for the season finale.
Yes, exactly. So Penn State, 12.5-point favorites against the Scarlet Knights on the road on this Thanksgiving weekend. Jared, we'll start off with you, your thoughts, and you can go ahead and give a score prediction if you're ready to do so as well.
Yeah, so Rutgers offense, they've actually taken some pretty big strides. They've been really bad on the offensive side of the ball the last several seasons, so I would say they're competent where they can really move the ball and put up some numbers against some of the weaker defenses. And, you know, they can do a lot of things right when the defense isn't, you know, phenomenal or anything like that. But when they did play Illinois, Oregon, and Ohio State last weekend, they really couldn't do much against them. So if Penn State's defense can play the way at the level that they have the last 3 weeks, they should definitely be able to slow them down. But, you know, if we have a somehow go back to where we were against UCLA or one of these other games, then, you know, Rutgers could do something on offense. So just be depend on which Penn State defense shows up, hopefully the one we've seen the last 3 weeks. But Rutgers quarterback, some of you may remember the name, Ethan, and I'm going to screw this up just like Michigan State's quarterback, Callie Akamanis. Tim,
Callie Akamanis.
How is it pronounced again?
Callie Akamanis. I've heard
Thank that. You.
Southern announcers say it.
I've been referring to him as AK.
Guide, so I trust them on that one.
Okay, yeah. He transferred Rutgers a couple of years ago after spending a little bit of time as Minnesota's starting quarterback, but he's got 17 touchdowns, 7 interceptions, completing 61% of his passes. So he's doing, you know, he's efficient, but not, you know, not spectacular by any means. He did throw for at least 250 yards in 8 of 11 games this year. But like I mentioned against, Oregon and Ohio State was both about 80 yards. So well under 100 in each of those games. So, you know, he's put up numbers, against certain defenses, but against defense with the pulse, they haven't really been able to do as much. He does do a nice job of spreading the ball around. They have three main receivers that they go to. And basically each week, it's kind of whoever has the favorable matchup is kind of the guy that they go to. But pretty much each week, one of those guys is getting 100 yards and a touchdown or two. So that kind of makes them a little bit harder to defend the passing game. And then the running back, Antoine Raymond, he's pretty much their workhorse. Sometimes he'll get, you know, about 30 carries in the game. He's the one who's going to, you know, fully carry the load on for the ground game. But yeah, we could see quite a bit of him depending how Rutgers, you know, what their plan is. Had 42 carries against Maryland a couple weeks ago, so they're definitely not afraid to ride him. And final point on the offense, offensive line is not very good at all in pass protection. AK, who I'll just stick with AK to be safe, has been sacked 33 times this year. I want to say 8 or 9 games he's been sacked 3 or more times, and they've had some.
Really, that's an average of 3 sacks a game, just doing the math in my head.
Yeah. So there was, I don't know if I have it in front of me here, but I know Minnesota, I think, had like 9 sacks against him. Michigan had 7 sacks against them. So there were games against some pretty good defensive lines where he just got brought down over and over and over again. So considering how Penn State's pass rush has looked these last few weeks, hopefully that will be the case. And, you know, they can get in his face and kind of stay there and, you know, not let him get much going through the air.
It'd be another big day for Denai Dennis Sutton, Zane Duran, anyone else who wants Absolutely. To join in on the sack party. Mm-hmm. You know, so, yeah, definitely something to keep an eye on. Just a couple thoughts, at least about Rutgers' offense. As you probably know, their offensive coordinator, Kirk Sciarca, was Penn State's offensive coordinator during that COVID season, which Pat likes to claim never existed. But he's been at Rutgers now. This is his third year, I believe. So he, you know, so it doesn't surprise me that he would ride his running back for 42 carries in a game. That's kind of his MO. So look for them to try to establish run a lot. But you mentioned the off, and since Rutgers joined the Big Ten in 2014 when the series resumed, you know, in the 10 times they've played, basically since Rutgers joined the Big Ten, Rutgers has only scored 10 points more twice out of 10 games have they even reached 10 points. Wow. And they haven't scored more than 10 points ever. If, just for fun, Jared, I'm going to go through the point totals for Rutgers starting from 2014 to...
Yeah, I think I can tell you which two games they reached 10 points in.
Yeah, you know what? Why don't you tell me what, without looking it up, what were the 2 years that Rutgers...
I think it was a 2014 season. Penn State won 14-10. And then 2022, Penn State won 55-10.
Yep, you nailed it. Good job.
Wow, so okay.
The other games besides 2014 and 2022, so starting from 2015, I'll give you the point totals. 3, 0, 6, 7, 6, 7, 0, and 6 points. So, and I believe they have not scored a touchdown in Happy Valley since joining the Big Ten. The last time they scored a touchdown at Beaver Stadium was, believe it or not, 1994.
I mean, Rutgers
27 shootout-y type of game.
Yeah, I mean, they obviously haven't done much in the Big Ten, but I mean, most of those years it seemed like their offense was the worst in the conference, sometimes by a wide margin. I remember, what year was it? 2016, maybe? It might have been the year Penn State won the Big Ten, and Penn State shut them out like 39-0 in a sleet storm on the road. And I think at that point, that was Rutgers maybe like their fifth shutout of the season.
Those were during the Chris Ash years.
So it was almost like half their games, like they're getting shut out. So I mean, can't even get a field goal. So I mean,
if I remember that game correctly, I think like Miles Sanders fumbled the opening kickoff. Mm-hmm. Rutgers recovered it, and like I think they were already at least in field goal range, and I think like Penn State kind of pushed them back a little, so they had to kick a longer field goal, which they missed. And then they never came close to scoring again the rest of the game. Like, I mean, that's how bad they were.
Yeah, it almost sounds like Penn State's 2004 offense. The 6-4 game, I'm almost certain they were given the ball a couple times, like, you know, inside Iowa's 10 and just got pushed back and missed a field goal or fumbled it away or whatever. But anyways, but yeah.
He's made Rutgers – he's definitely made them more competitive. They're not a complete pushover. Like, for sure. Team that forts of bowl eligibility every year.
For sure. And considering what their offense has been, just where they are right now, they've taken some major strides to get there, for sure.
So, Jared, as we talk, so defensively, what are you finding on Rutgers?
I feel like the recent years, it's been, they're a pretty bad offense and a capable defense, but their defense has backslid a little bit this year. Don't really make a whole lot of plays in the backfield, averaging less than a sack a game. They've had a few pretty poor showings. Just looking through their season, allowed 38 against Washington, 31 in the loss to Minnesota, allowed 38 to Iowa, 56 to Ohio State, or excuse me, to Oregon, 42 to Ohio State last week. And that was without Carnell Tate and Jeremiah Smith both out of the lineup. Their defense just isn't quite as, they were losing some low-scoring games. It seems like earlier in the Schiano era, or it was second time around with Rutgers. But, definitely just been haven't really been necessarily great against the run or the pass. So, the offense has definitely improved for Rutgers, but the bad part is that the defense has taken a pretty big step back.
Yeah, and maybe you said and I missed it, but once when I was just briefly looking up some stats for Rutgers, I noticed they're dead last in the Big Ten in run defense in terms of yards per rush given up. It's over 6.5 yards, and I'm thinking to myself, man, Catron and Nick are got to be licking their chops at if they see those stats.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you just look at like the tear Catron's been on. What was it? 181 against Michigan State, 160 last week. I mean, he's just been running. So hard. I mean, hats off to Catron. I mean, he, no matter how bad things got this year, I mean, you just saw maximum effort from him every single game. And it kind of seems like with this team just finally, you know, the season going on a bit more of a positive direction. I mean, he's just elevated his game, you know, even more. And I mean, just so happy to see him just playing at the level he's been. But yeah, to your point, right, if Rutgers is giving up more than 6 yards a carry and has the worst rush defense in the Big Ten, then we could be in, you know, maybe 200 from Catron on Saturday, and definitely a couple touchdown runs by Singleton, hoping at least he gets one to break the record. Both records, actually, because he's tied with Saquon for – they both have 43 rushing touchdowns, 53 overall touchdowns, I believe. So one more rushing touchdown, who have both records.
Oh, I didn't realize it was both. I thought that was just rushing touchdowns, but one more touchdown. Yeah. Either way, he will surpass Saquon for all time touchdowns. So I would, if I was a betting man, I would bet on that happening. I would also bet on Catron Allen becoming Penn State's first ever 4,000 yard rusher after this weekend.
46 yards away. So, yeah, he has 3,000.
Yeah, I think I'm pretty sure he'll get that.
I feel pretty confident, which is like, yeah, he's got the record. He's number one by himself right now, but that would just be another, you know, honor to be the only Penn State running back to get 4,000 career rushing yards, which is just incredible when you think of just the who's who of legendary running backs to come through this program. Just really just amazing stuff for Catron. And hold on, I did want to, but regarding the touchdown record, they had it in the game notes this week. Nicholas Singleton is tied with Saquon Barkley for the Penn State career record in rushing touchdowns, 43, and total touchdowns, 53.
Okay, so it's both. All right. I was also going to add, I will be surprised if Ethan Grunkmeyer has more than 15 pass attempts in this game, because Penn State just run. They're going to run the damn ball and have plenty of success doing so.
I think we'll see the same plan of attack this as we did against Nebraska. Yeah, lots of running the ball, just pounding the ball over and over, and then just setting up some play action passes. Yeah. So it worked to perfection against Nebraska, and if it's one of those things that you can do, that you can go out and execute, and you have the talent up front and the running backs to do so, then you can make it look easy. So hopefully they can go out there and make it look easy on Saturday.
Oh, certainly. So on that note, Jared, do you have a score prediction you're ready to share with us? Or
I'll go 31-10. I don't think their offense is able to get too much going, considering the level Penn State's been playing on defense lately, and just that they find their stride on defensive line especially. I just think it's going to be another workmanlike victory. Like you just said, lots of pounding Catron and Singleton. So I think we'll see some long time consuming drives that end in the end zone. And a game where I don't think Rutgers gets a whole lot going on offense, and Penn State's just able to play keep away a bit and just get a workmanlike victory and, you know, win by a wide margin for the second week in a row. Third, I guess, actually.
I'm in the same boat, same similar prediction. I have 35-10 Penn State. And yes, I'm literally picking 10 for Rutgers, because until they show me they can score more than 10 points on Penn State, I'm not giving them any more than 10 points. And like I said, I think, you know, they just feed Catron and Nick all day and throw in some timely play action passes and, you know, call it a day.
Absolutely. Yeah. One thing I would love to see is deny Dennis Sutton block a punt.
Yes, we need one more deny Dennis Sutton punt block.
He's tied with Andre Collins and Jack Ham. They're the only two other Penn State players to get three block punts in a season. So one more against Rutgers, and he's got the record to himself.
Well, hopefully he'll also add something to the record books. I think that's enough proving Rutgers for
fair enough. City.
So go ahead and move on to a little brief coaching search news. And I'm not going to get into who it really might be, because frankly, at this point, I don't know. None of us really know. We're not Pat Kraft. We're not in Pat Kraft's circle of trust. And if you go to the message boards, you'll have some people that are kind of known insiders saying they heard this and that from their sources, but you know, nobody truly knows anything at this point. So, but I will say, we talked about it earlier. You know, there's a lot of clamoring for Terry Smith to get the full-time job. It was reported by media outlets that Terry was going to get an interview today, although there's in his weekly press conference today, it doesn't sound like that's happened just yet. He was asked a question, quote, "You said last week you had not had an interview of a permanent job, but you talked to Pat since Saturday night. If you haven't, has there been an interview scheduled for this week?" And Terry's response was, "Yeah, right now my focus is just trying to beat Rutgers and become bowl eligible. I think there will be an opportunity to sit with Pat and we'll just go from there." So sounds like it hasn't happened yet, or at least at the time of the press conference earlier today, it hadn't happened. Maybe it's happening right now as we're recording this, but it sounds like Terry will get his interview this week. And I know there's still, you know, people still throw out, I still see Kalen DeBoer rumors. Even though the media's kind of gotten solid on that, that's still something that's being floated around as a possibility. I think a lot of it's going to come down as well to, what does Lane Kiffin do? Does he leave Ole Miss? If so, where does he go? I mean, There are some rumors it would be Florida. LSU rumors seem to be heating up. And then there's some folks seem to be thinking that hinting at Alabama, even, which would also hint at Kalen DeBoer moving on somewhere. But again, who knows? I don't want to dive too deep down the rabbit hole, but you know, I know I asked you this half jokingly on Saturday, but your thoughts on Terry Smith, at least. Obviously, he's getting an interview as he deserves one. Where do you stand on him actually getting the permanent gig?
So I mentioned after the game when we discussed this a little bit at length, especially the fan and the player reaction. So I said that I thought that, you know, I was very impressed with the job that he's been doing and just getting the team to play to its potential and not letting them quit after everything that's happened this season. So been very impressed with that. I did say, you know, let's see how we feel tomorrow. Like, you know, once everybody sleeps on it. And I do feel kind of once you get past the emotion of this kind of somewhat cathartic victory, that this historic night, for some of our key fan favorite players and everything. But, you know, once you kind of reflect on a little bit more, it's hard to believe that Penn State would hire Franklin's assistant after all this. So that's kind of where I'm at with the whole Terry Smith thing. So it's just hard for me to say that they made a move like that just to, you know, take the longtime assistant and, you know, kind of stay with, remain with basically the same system, the same way of doing things for these past 12 years. The whole point of firing Franklin, I'm sure, is because they really want to shake things up and try something different and take a swing and, you know, breathe some life into this program. But they, you know, apparently felt, you know, was winning games, but things had gotten stale and they just weren't able to get over the hump that they've been trying to get to for so long. So with that in mind, really impressed with the job Terry Smith has done, and he absolutely deserves the interview and a serious look for sure. I just don't see them, you know, sticking with what we have. And I'm just assuming they want to go in a bit of a different direction and, you know, welcome a new regime and see where things fall from there.
You know, I was asking myself this question today and I really had a hard time answering it, but do you remember a time where a beloved interim coach, guy who the players just love, you know, he rallied the troops after a, you know, mid-season change where things were going pretty rough, kind of, you know, steered the ship in a better direction, and, you know, players loved him. It was all this clamoring for him to get the full-time job. And, you know, they get the full-time job. Has that ever really worked out, like, successfully in the long term? Because I can't think of a
not long term. The only time I think I can recall it really working out, at least temporarily, was LSU with Coach O, where he got promoted, and obviously they won a national title, and then what, a year and a half later they canned him. So to your point, long term, no. You know, there's the same thing with West Virginia when Rich Rod left for Michigan.
That's where my mind was going.
Yeah, and they. I think it was Oklahoma in the Orange Bowl. They just,
yes, it was Oklahoma. I looked this up today, so
the fans loved them, and yeah, they were so impressed that they gave him the starting job, but they gave him the full time job rather. You know, didn't work out. So I can't think of too many instances where it was the long term solution. No,
so that's kind of my point. Like, I just don't. You know, long term, I just don't see this working out if they, or at least, you know, we wouldn't be competing for national championships like Pat Kraft claims he wants to, mm-hmm. promote Terry to full-time job. That being said, I do certainly hope whoever is the permanent hire, they keep Terry on board in some way. I do think that's really important. He still wants, you know, he prefers to be the full-time head coach, but he did say as press conference, he'd be open to sticking around in another capacity. So he kind of walked back a bit from the con, which made it seem like he was going all in on being head coach or I'm out of here type of.
Mm-hmm.
At least that was being implied. He didn't say that.
Yeah. That was more that in his speculation than anything that he said for sure. Yeah.
So, but I think I'm with you. I don't think it should be him for the permanent job. Now, maybe if like Kraft whiffs on his top few choices, you know, I could be okay with him as like the break glass in case of emergency hire. I could see a scenario where that would be feasible, but I mean, unless it comes down to that, I do think it should be somebody besides Terry Smith for the permanent job. As impressed as I've been with how he's rallied the troops, you know, when you make these decisions on who to hire, you got to be thinking long-term picture. You can't just get caught up in the emotions of the short term and, you know, and just kind of make a decision based on emotions.
Yeah. And I totally get the support for Smith. You know, I'm not making the argument that he doesn't deserve the job or anything like that. I just don't think that the athletic department, and I don't think Kraft is really giving that serious consideration, honestly. Just from the way these things work, I'm just assuming he's looking for a completely new regime to step in here and try to take us to the next level. As opposed to, you know, staying in house. So that's where I'm at. I would be pretty shocked if it is Terry Smith ends up being the guy, to be honest.
So on that note, I know I said I have no earthly idea who the hire is going to end up being, but Jared, if you want to take a crack and make a prediction on who you, at this point, Monday night, November 24th, 2025, who the next Penn State head football coach will be, have at it.
Yeah. So this isn't necessarily the person that I want, but I'm just going to stick with the most logical choice from the beginning. And that's Eli Drinkwitz. And the reason I've been saying him is that of all the coaches on the list, he's kind of been the one steady person on there that has, you know, he's on a team where he's doing a great job with Missouri, but you don't necessarily have to worry about them making a playoff run or even being in the playoffs. So one, he'll be available at the end of the regular season here, which means they could hire him as early as Sunday. But yeah, I just thought, you know, when you kind of, the other thing about him too, is he's one of the few guys that Penn State's looking at who isn't currently coaching their alma mater, which makes it even more difficult to pry them away. And he also hasn't signed an extension like Cignetti or Elko or some of the other targets as well. So logically, Drinkwitz just seems like he would be the most probable choice. But to your point, we got to see what happens with Lane Kiffin. They play Black Friday. The Egg Bowl is Black Friday. So Saturday they're expecting Ole Miss has mentioned that they'll have clarity on Saturday. So once that happens, then we'll kind of see. But I mean, you know, Eli could be the head coach of LSU come Saturday, or Florida or Ole Miss, or, you know, so he may just say there's going to be a lot of really great openings in the SEC. And if he's a target for those jobs, which I'm sure he is, then he may end up over there as well. So yeah, if you're trying to get a prediction, I mean, there's just not really a name you can point to and say, yeah, that's going to really likely be the guy. I think we lost Tim for momentarily, but, you know, if I'm just picking my own person, I'm going Brian Hartline. That was the person that I was really hoping. Tim's back. We lost you.
Yeah, sorry, the connection.
Given it to my choice because I wasn't certain how long you're going to be gone for. So I started talking about Brian Hartline and how I was high on him, someone that has that championship DNA. You know, you're taking a big swing on someone, so why not look at a up and coming coordinator? But from what I understand, he's not, you know, he hasn't been a real serious name in the mix, so I'm not expecting that. But Hartline's kind of the guy I've been crossing my fingers for and hoping he establishes himself in this search, but it's not looking like that's the case.
Yeah, and well, hopefully hopefully a week from now we'll know. We'll get that Pete Bammel tweet or notification or phone of who the hire is. And yeah, I don't know about you, Jerry, but I think on Thanksgiving, I'll probably have the phone on my lap on the table, just checking the, you know, message boards, because I can't help myself, because I'm a junkie for, you know, I can't, you know, like, it's just, I'm going to just see if I can find any little tidbits on who it might be, or who knows, maybe things are going to heat up a day or two from now and we'll have a better idea who it might be.
Yeah. I mean, we're getting very close. So there's a very good chance by this weekend, we'll finally have an answer. And once we do, then, you know, that just opens up the door to it. Right now we're kind of in hurry up and wait mode, where, you know, you're just waiting and waiting. And we've just kind of been in this pattern for several weeks now. But then as soon as the new name is finally introduced, then, you know, we'll be talking about who in the staff is staying, who's leaving, who are they bringing, which players are leaving, which players are going to come along with the new coach. So it's just going to be a whirlwind of information. And we'll learn a lot about what next year's team is going to look like, and just the future of the program for that instance. But it's just a strange situation right now, where we're just in this holding pattern, and then everything is going to change very abruptly in a matter of days here.
By the way, perfect segue into, you know, what I meant to do earlier is for all that, once we do make the hire, yes, there's going to be all that other news and discussion about, you know, who's that new hire going to bring in to fill out his staff, which players are going to stay and leave, or who that coach going to bring in through the portal, and or whoever he can salvage in the 2026 recruiting class. So all that and more at our website, blackshadaris.com. So we also do cover other Penn State sports, including basketball, hockey, wrestling, you name it. The winter sports are starting to get into full gear now. So as we shift out of football, plenty of the hockey, wrestling, and hoops coverage coming your way. And of course, if you haven't done so already, please subscribe to our channel, Black Shoe Diaries PSU. Last I checked, we had 419 subscribers, which we've gotten probably 25, at least 25 in the past week, because we were under 400 a week ago.
Blue past 409.
We passed 409. Yeah, we're 419. We're at 409 plus 10. So thank you to everybody who listened, watched, subscribed to us. Appreciate all 11 of you currently watching this live. Apparently you don't have anything better to do on your Monday night of Thanksgiving week, so we appreciate you tuning in. But yeah, Blackshirt Diaries PSU is our YouTube page, blackshirtdiaries.com. Check out our daily writings on there. And on that note, we are going to go on to the final segment, which is our weekly predictions.
Tim, actually, before we get there, I don't think you gave your answer on who if you had to pick one name for $1,000, who would that pick be? If you had to make
your prediction? Man, I thought I was going to avoid having to do
this. I had to say it. You do too.
Yeah, all right. Fair enough. You know what? I may be dead wrong on this, but I still can't shake the feeling it's going to be Kalen DeBoer. Like, I know the talk of him, it's been like radio silence, but it's kind of odd because, you know, there was plenty of talk just last week about it, and then suddenly it's all quiet, and then, I don't know, it seems a little suspicious, especially not knowing what Lane Kiffin's going to do. Mm-hmm. There's rumors that Kiffin actually covets the Bama job out of all the other SEC jobs, you know. So, and you know, Jimmy, you know, represents Kiffin and DeBoer. Mm-hmm. Jimmy Sexton, a guy who represents pretty much all the top FBS coaches. So, who knows? Maybe Sexton's doing some Sexton things to not for it, but I don't know. I could be dead wrong, but you know what? I'm gonna put my money down tonight and just say. Okay. It's going to be DeBoer.
Okay. Okay. I appreciate the perspective, and again, that would just really throw this whole carousel into chaos, and it would be I would be very happy to see this as a Penn State fan and just someone who, you know, covers college football. It would be it'd be quite the fun experience to watch unfold. So I like the way you think.
Yeah, I would hope so. But again, I think we'll see. Anyway, moving on to our weekly picks. Jared, I regret to inform you, you and I both went 0-3 last week on our predictions. USC lost by 15 at Oregon. Pitt went in and just kicked the crap out of Georgia Tech. And then Montana chokes away an undefeated regular season at home to their bitter rival, Montana State. So
Grizz stepped on a rake.
Meanwhile, Pat went 2-1 on his picks. So, you know, the fading on us finally worked for Pat this week. Unfortunately, I don't have the overall standings on me. I'm sure maybe Pat will find those for us at some point. But I imagine I think I was in the lead before last week. And since you and I both went 0-3, that would remain the case. But we'll see how we pick these games, though, Jared. Maybe Pat will send in his picks to us later. But for now, it'll be you and I. So we're going to start with Black Friday and a rivalry that I was really happy to see return last year. Maybe one of the silver linings of this latest round of realignment in college football was the resumption of the Texas A&M-Texas rivalry. So the Aggies undefeated 11-0, going to Austin to take on the Horns. The Aggies are a 2.5-point favorite. Jared, who do you got?
I got A&M, and I'll lay the points for sure. This is such an intense rivalry. We've seen a lot of really great games between these two over the years, kind of one of those throw the records out. So it's going to be a really, really incredible atmosphere. I hope if you're a college football fan, you should definitely be tuning into this Black Friday evening. But A&M is just so much more explosive than Texas is. And I really think that they're going to be winning this game by at least 14 points. Texas definitely has the defense to keep it interesting. And like I was saying, add the rivalry aspect to it and everything. So I'm hoping it's going to be a really, you know, intense, hard fought game. But I just see second half A&M just making some big plays, whether it's in the return game or, Reed making plays with you know, on the ground, finding room and getting some breaking off some explosive runs or whatever the case may be. KC Concepcion is just one of the most exciting players in the nation to watch. So I really think A&M is gonna pull ahead in the fourth quarter here and win by a couple scores.
Yeah, I think I got A&M as well. I think to me, the way they came back from that 30-3 halftime deficit against South Carolina when Murphy's Law was in full effect in the first half for them, to come back and win that game in the manner they did, that to me just, I mean, that's what championship teams do, Jared. Mm-hmm. I think this is a national championship caliber team. And I think they're going to, you know, rivalry games with Texas will absolutely make this a dogfight, but you know, like I said, I think A&M by like 10 to 14 points in the end. And yeah, I would take whatever the points are. I think it's 56. And I'm sorry, I'm looking at the Penn State Rutgers thing. Let's see. The points on this one are, it's 51.5. So yeah, I would take the points on that one. So both got A&M there. Moving on to the game. Of course, I was going to pick Ohio State, Michigan, you being an Ohio native. So the Buckeyes are 9.5-point favorites at Michigan. The Buckeyes defense has just been absolutely suffocating this year. They're giving up like less than 10 points a game on average, even more suffocating than last year's defense, frankly. And, you know, the offense, of course, you know, still pretty explosive. Jeremiah Smith, Carnell Tate. You know, no way they can lose this one to Michigan, right, Jared?
Yeah, no way, but then that's what we all said last year, and Ohio State went out and lost the most baffling game I've ever seen in my life, where a team had absolutely no you know, right to lose that game, and they just basically did the one thing they couldn't do against Michigan. They just tried to run the ball right against their two All-American defensive tackles for whatever reason over and over again. But I am going to say they learned from their mistakes last year. It's very tempting to take Michigan, and when you're giving them, you know, 9.5 and such an intense rivalry game where, you know, this is really the definition to throw the records out. But yeah, I just think Ohio State's defense is too good. I think they'll really limit Michigan, and, you know, Sand is just so efficient. I mean, just completing 80% of his pass, over, I think he's still over 80%, doing that like week in, week out. Still hasn't had a bad game or an off game or anything like that. Hasn't even had like been off for a half or anything like that. I mean, he's just been like Robo QB, you know, with just finding the open guy and zipping the ball to him, and, you know, leaning a little bit in the running game and the defense as well, where he doesn't necessarily have to be the hero every week. But yeah, I just think Ohio State defense will absolutely limit Michigan, and you know, Ohio State's offense is definitely good enough to pull away and win by at least two touchdowns. So definitely give me Ohio State, and I'll lay the points.
You know, I remember around this time last year, like waking up that Saturday morning, you know, that not thinking that there's any way Michigan was going to beat Ohio State. And then a few hours later, or I guess later that afternoon, my friend and I were texting each other about getting last minute flights and tickets to the Big Ten championship game. It was just really surreal. Day.
Yeah, I don't think any of us were, considering that Penn State might be going to the Big Ten championship game.
Lost you there. You back, Jared?
Yeah. Okay. I was starting to say, yeah, I don't think any of us consider Penn State might make the Big Ten championship game, because we all just assumed it was a lock for Ohio State, like we're assuming this year. So,
yeah, sorry for technical difficulties with the internet tonight. But yeah, so that being said, I'm taking Michigan to cover. I think Ohio State wins, but I think it's by less than 9.5. Like, I'm thinking maybe, okay, like a, you know, 6 to 8 point win for the Buckeyes. I do think Michigan, I mean, their defense, you know, once again, can keep Ohio State's offense in relative check. And I, you know, and I think, you know, offensively, they're better than they were last year. I mean, kind of hard for them not to be, because at least you got good quarterback play this time. So I do think, and again, you know, it's kind of mental for Ryan Day at this point. He had the same problems like with Michigan that James Franklin had with Ohio State during his entire tenure here. So it's, you know, he's got a major, you know, 800-pound gorilla to get off his back in this one. So, you know, I do think they do get it off, but it's gonna be it's always painful trying to get that grill off your back. So, you know, they'll have some struggles, but so I think Michigan covers. I think Ohio State wins, but I think Michigan covers the spread. So we're a little disagreement on there.
I'd be fine if you're right, because that'll be a really thrilling game to see a one score game between those two.
Yeah, hopefully it'll be a good game regardless. So that's, I always look forward. That's probably one of my favorite Thanksgiving weekend games to watch. It's like, yeah, besides Penn State. So looking forward to that one. And last but not least, we got the Iron Bowl featuring my pick for the next head coach, Kalen DeBoer's Alabama Crimson Tide at the Auburn Tigers. Crimson Tide are 6.5 point favorites. Jared, are you rolling with the Tide, or are you going to war with the Eagles?
War Eagle. I'm taking Auburn in the points. This Auburn team does not have a good record, but you know what? They've lost a lot of close games. So it's not like they're just a bad team that's just getting steamrolled over and over. I mean, they're fighting. They're just, you know, they're just not winning games, unfortunately. So, you know, I obviously at home against Alabama, they would absolutely love to give them a loss that likely would kick them out of the playoffs. So Auburn's going to be highly motivated. They haven't really lost their fight much this year, despite just having a really bad season, going through a coaching change like so many other programs. So yeah, I think Auburn will keep it close. I don't know if they'll win or not, but give me the Auburn the points, and I would not shock if the way this series goes, as we've seen over the years, anything can happen. And I think Auburn, I'm not going to take them outright, but I'll take them in the 6.5 points for sure.
Well, it was only a couple of years ago. Auburn was a heavy underdog at home in the Iron Bowl, and they had Bama pretty much dead to rights. It was like fourth and goal from, I want to say, like the 25-yard line or something.
I think it was like 30-something, yeah.
So, I mean, they basically had Bama dead to rights. Like, they got a sack, I believe, the play before and put him in a fourth and goal from like 25, 30 yards out. And Jalen Milroe just finds a receiver in the back of the end zone.
Remember the end zone? Yeah, it was amazing.
Prayer, you know, and Alabama goes on to win. So yeah, it's certainly possible. And I am picking Auburn mainly because if Auburn wins, that puts Bama at 9-3 and puts their playoff hopes in serious jeopardy, which would maybe hasten the departure of DeBoer. You know, there's rumors that he feels like a fish out of water down there, maybe not a good cultural fit. And you know what? A loss to your bitter rival would definitely get the fan base angry enough at you to want to get the hell out of Dodge. So, yeah, War Eagle, baby. Let's go.
Yeah, if Bama does lose this game, then it's going to get really interesting as far as, like you mentioned, just hitting refresh over and over. I'll definitely be looking for any potential breaking news if that's the case.
Yeah, and so to recap, Jared and I both picked A&M to cover against Texas. Jared is Ohio State covering against Michigan. I have Michigan covering. We both have Auburn covering against Alabama. So hopefully we'll do a little better than 0-3 this week, Jared. So Pat, we'll see if he gets his picks in sometime, and you know, we'll tally it up as well to the total. But that's it for us. Thanks for joining. We'll be back Saturday with post game either Saturday or if we can't do it right after the game Saturday, we'll do a post game show on Sunday. So
we clearly haven't discussed what we're doing post game coverage yet. So
yeah, we had to do this last minute to make sure that, you know, we could fit this in before our, you know, Thanksgiving plans go into effect. So we'll figure it out though. Either be right after the game on Saturday or we'll do one the day after on Sunday. But either way, there will be a Rutgers post game show of some kind. So keep an eye out for that. In the meantime, have a wonderful and safe Thanksgiving with your relatives, your loved ones, whoever you spend it with. And we will catch you after the Rutgers game.
Happy Thanksgiving, everyone.